29. Rule of Blood. Art form, for colors beyond our ken. For its grand songs we yearn. We must attract creation's spren. These songs suffice till we learn. From the Listener Song of Revision, 279th stanza. Toral Satias closed his eyes and rested Oathbringer on his shoulder, breathing in the sweet, moldy scent of Parshendi blood. The thrill of battle surged within him, a blessed and beautiful strength. His own blood pumped so loudly in his ears he almost couldn't hear the battlefield shouts and groans of pain. For a moment he reveled only in the delicious glow of the thrill, the heady euphoria at having spent an hour engaged in the only thing that brought true joy anymore, contending for his life and taking those of enemies lesser than himself. It faded. As always, the thrill was fleeting once battle itself ended. It had grown less and less sweet during these raids on the Parshendi, likely because he knew deep inside that this contest was pointless. It did not stretch him, did not carry him further toward his ultimate goals of conquest. Slaughtering creme-covered savages in a herald's forsaken land had truly lost its savor. He sighed, lowering his blade, opening his eyes. Amaram approached across the battlefield, stepping over corpses of men in Parshendi. His shard plate was bloodied purple up to the elbows, and he carried a glimmering gem heart in one gauntleted hand. He kicked aside a Parshendi corpse and joined Satias, his own honor guard fanning out to join those of his high prince. Satias spared a moment of annoyance for how efficiently they moved, particularly when compared to his own men. Amaram pulled off his helm and hefted the gem heart, tossing it up and catching it.
"Your maneuver here today failed, you realize."
"Failed," Satias said, lifting his faceplate. Nearby, his soldiers slaughtered a pocket of 50 Parshendi who hadn't managed to get off the plateau when the rest retreated.
"I think this went quite nicely,"
Amaram pointed. A stain had appeared in the plateaus to the west, toward the war camps. The banners indicated that Hatham and Roian, the two high princes who were supposed to have gone on this plateau run, had arrived together. They used bridges like Dalinar's, slow, plodding things it had been easy to outrun. One of the advantages of the bridge crews Satias preferred was that they needed very little training to function. If Dalinar had thought to slow him down with his stunt of trading Oathbringer for Satias's bridgeman, he had been proven a fool.
"We needed to get out here," Amaram said. "Seize the gem heart and return before the others arrived. Then you could have claimed that you didn't realize you weren't in the rotation today. The arrival of both other armies removes that shred of deniability."
"You mistake me," Satias said. "You assume I still care about denialability."
The last Parshendi died with enraged screams. Satias felt proud of that. Others said Parshendi warriors on the field never surrendered, but he'd seen them try it once, long ago, in the first year of the war. They'd laid down their weapons. He'd slaughtered them all personally, with shard hammer and plate, beneath the eyes of their retreating companions watching from a nearby plateau. Never again had any Parshendi denied him or his men their right to finish a battle the proper way. Satias waved for the vanguard to gather and escort him back to the war camps, while the rest of the army licked its wounds. Amaram joined him, crossing a bridge and passing idling bridgemen who lay on the ground and slept while better men died.
"I am duty-bound to join you on the battlefield, Your Highness," Amaram said as they walked. "But I want you to know that I do not approve of our actions here. We should be seeking to bridge our differences with the king and Dalinar, not trying to agitate them further."
Satias snorted.
"Don't give me that noble talk. It works fine for others, but I know you for the ruthless bastard you really are."
Amaram set his jaw, eyes forward. When they reached their horses, he reached out, hand on Satias's arm.
"Toral," he said softly. There is so much more to the world than your squabbles. You're right about me, of course. Take that admission with the understanding that to you, above all others, I can speak the truth. Alethkar needs to be strong for what is coming. Sadeus climbed the mounting block the groom had set out. Getting onto a horse in Shardplate could be dangerous to the animal if not done correctly. Besides, he'd once had a stirrup snap on him when he stepped into it to haul himself into the saddle. He'd ended up on his backside. Alethkar does need to be strong, Sadeus said, holding out a gauntleted hand. So I'll make it so by force of fist and the rule of blood. Amaram reluctantly placed the gem heart there, and Sadeus gripped it, holding his reins in the other hand.
Do you ever worry,
Amaram asked,
about what you do, about what we must do?
He nodded toward a group of surgeons carrying wounded men across the bridges.
Worry, Sadeus said. Why should I? It gives the wretches a chance to die in battle for something worthwhile.
You say things like that a lot these days, I've noticed, Amaram said. You weren't like that before.
I've learned to accept the world as it is, Amaram, Sadeus said, turning his horse. That's something very few people are willing to do. They stumble along, hoping, dreaming, pretending. That doesn't change a single storming thing in life. You have to stare the world in the eyes, in all its grimy brutality. You have to acknowledge its depravities, live with them. It's the only way to accomplish anything meaningful.
With a squeeze of the knees, Sadeus started his horse forward, leaving Amaram behind for the moment. The man would remain loyal. Sadeus and Amaram had an understanding. Even Amaram now being a shard-bearer would not change that. As Sadeus and his vanguard approached Hatham's army, he noticed a group of Parshendi on a nearby plateau watching. Those scouts of theirs were getting bold. He sent a team of archers to go chase them off, then rode toward a figure in resplendent shardplate at the front of Hatham's army, the High Prince himself, seated upon a reshadium.
Damnation! Those animals were far superior to any other horse flesh. How to get one?
Sadeus,
Hatham called out to him.
What have you done here?
After a quick moment of decision, Sadeus lifted his arm back and hurled the gem heart across the plateau, separating them. It hit the rock near Hatham and bounced along in a roll, glowing faintly.
I got bored, Sadeus shouted back. I thought I'd save you some trouble.
Then, ignoring further questions, Sadeus continued on his way. Adolin Colin had a duel today, and he'd decided not to miss it, just in case the youth embarrassed himself again. A few hours later, Sadeus settled down into his place in the dueling arena, tugging at the stock on his neck. Insufferable things. Fashionable, but insufferable. He would never tell a soul, not even ELA, that he secretly wished he could just go about in a simple uniform like Dalinar. He couldn't ever do that, of course. Not just because he wouldn't be seen bowing to the codes and the king's authority, but because a military uniform was actually the wrong uniform for these days. The battles they fought for Alethkar at the moment weren't battles with sword and shield. It was important to dress the part when you had a role to play. Dalinar's military outfits proved he was lost, that he didn't understand the game he was playing. Sadeus leaned back to wait as whispers filled the arena like water in a bowl. A large attendance today. Adolin's stunt in his previous duel had drawn attention, and anything novel was of interest to the court. Sadeus's seat had a space cleared around it to give him extra room and privacy, though it was really just a simple chair built onto the stone bleachers of this pit of an arena. He hated how his body felt outside of Shardplate, and he hated more how he looked. Once he'd turned heads as he walked. His power had filled a room. Everyone had looked to him,
and many had lusted when seeing him, lusted for his power, for who he was. He was losing that. Oh, he was still powerful, perhaps more so. But the look in their eyes was different, and every way of responding to his loss of youthfulness made him look petulant. He was dying, step by step. Like every man, true, but he felt that death looming. Decades away, hopefully, but it cast a long, long shadow. The only path to immortality was through conquest. Rustling clothing announced Iale slipping into the seat beside his. Sadeus reached out absently, resting his hand on the small of her back and scratching at that place she liked. Her name was symmetrical, a tiny bit of blasphemy from her parents. Some people dared imply such holiness of their children. Sadeus liked those types. Indeed, the name was what had first intrigued him about her. His wife said with a sigh. Very nice. The duel hasn't started yet, I see. Mere moments away, I believe. Good. I can't stand waiting. I hear you gave away the gem heart you captured today. Threw it at Hatham's feet and rode away as if I didn't have a care. Clever. I should have seen that as an option. You'll undermine Dalinar's claim that we only resist him because of our greed. Below, Adolin finally stepped out onto the field, wearing his blue shard plate. Some of the light eyes clapped politely. Across the way, Eraniv left his own preparatory room, his polished plate its natural color, except across the breastplate, which he'd painted a deep black. Sadeus narrowed his eyes, still scratching Iale's back. This duel should not even be happening, he said. Everyone was supposed to be too afraid or too dismissive to accept his challenges. Idiots, Iale said softly. They know, Toril, what they're supposed to do. I've dropped the right hints and promises. And yet every one of them secretly wants to be the man who brings down Adolin. Duelists are not a particularly dependable lot. They are brash, hot-headed, and care too much about showing off and gaining renown. His father's plan cannot be allowed to work, Sadeus said. It won't. Sadeus glanced at where Dalinar had set up. Sadeus's own position was not too far away, within shouting distance. Dalinar didn't look at him. I built this kingdom, Sadeus said softly. I know how fragile it is, Iale. It should not be so difficult to knock the thing down. That would be the only way to properly build it anew. Like reforging a weapon, you melted down the remnants of the old before you created the replacement. The duel began down below, Adolin striding across the sands toward Eraniv, who wielded old Gavilar's blade with its wicked design. Adolin engaged too quickly. Was the boy that eager? In the crowd, light eyes grew quiet and dark eyes shouted, eager for another display like last time. However, this didn't devolve into a wrestling match. The two exchanged testing blows and Adolin backed away, having taken a hit on his shoulder. Sloppy, Sadeus thought. I finally discovered the nature of that disturbance at the king's chambers 2 weeks ago, Iale noted. Sadeus smiled, eyes still on the bout. Of course you did. Assassination attempt, she said. Someone sabotaged the king's balcony in a crude attempt at dropping him 100 feet to the rocks. From what I hear, it nearly worked. Not so crude, then, if it almost killed him. Pardon, Toril, but almost is a big distinction in assassinations. True. Sadeus searched within himself, seeking some sign of emotion at hearing that Elokar had almost died. He found none beside a faint sense of pity. He was fond of the boy, but to rebuild Alethkar, all vestiges of former rule would need to be removed. Elokar would need to die, preferably in a quiet manner, after Dalinar had been dealt with. Sadeus expected he'd have to cut the boy's throat himself, out of respect for old Gavilar.
"Who commissioned the assassins, do you suppose?" Sadeus asked, speaking softly enough that, with the buffer his guards kept around their seats, he didn't have to worry about being overheard.
"Hard to tell," Iale replied, scooting to the side and twisting to get him to scratch a different part of her back. "It wouldn't be Ruthar or Aladar."
Both were solidly in Sadeus's palm, Aladar with some resignation, Ruthar eagerly. Rohian was too much a coward, others too careful. Who else could have done it?
"Thanadol," Sadeus guessed.
"He's the most likely, but I will see what I can discover."
"It might be the same ones as with the king's armor," Sadeus said. "Perhaps we could find out more if I exercise my authority."
Sadeus was High Prince of Information, one of the old designations from previous centuries which split duties in the kingdom among high princes. It technically gave Sadeus authority over investigations and policing.
"Perhaps," Iale said hesitantly.
"But..."
She shook her head, watching another exchange of the duelists down below. This bout of fighting left Adolin with stormlight streaming from one gauntlet to the booing of some of the Dark Eyes. Why were those people even allowed in? There were Light Eyes who were unable to attend because Elokar reserved seating for their inferiors.
"Dalinar," Iale said, "has responded to our ploy of making you High Prince of Information. He used it as precedent for making himself High Prince of War, and so now every step you take invoking your rights as High Prince of Information cements his authority over this conflict."
Sadeus nodded.
"You have a plan, then?"
"Not quite yet," Iale said. "But I'm forming one. You've noticed how he started up patrols outside of the camps, and in the outer market. Should that be your duty?"
"No. That's the job of a High Prince of Commerce, which the king hasn't appointed. However, I should have authority over policing all 10 camps and appointing judges and magistrates. He should have involved me the moment an attempt was made on the king's life, but he didn't."
Sadeus chewed on the thought for a moment, removing his hand from Ile's back, letting her sit up straight.
"There is a weakness here we can exploit," Sadeus said. "Dalinar has always had a problem giving up authority. He never really trusts anyone to do their job. He didn't come to me when he should have. This weakens his claims that all parts of the kingdom should work together. It's a chink in his armor. Can you ram a dagger in it?"
Iale nodded. She'd use her informants to start questions in court. Why, if Dalinar was trying to forge a better Alethkar, was he unwilling to give up any power? Why hadn't he involved Sadeus in the king's protection? Why wouldn't he open his doors to Sadeus's judges?
What authority did the throne have, really, if it made assignments like the one to Sadeus, only to pretend they hadn't been given?
"You should renounce your appointment as High Prince of Information in protest," Iale said.
"No, not yet. We wait until the rumors have nipped at old Dalinar, made him decide he needs to let me do my job. Then, the moment before he tries to involve me, I renounce."
It would widen the cracks that way, both in Dalinar and in the kingdom itself. Adolin's bout continued below. He certainly didn't look like his heart was in it. He kept leaving himself open, taking hits. This was the youth who had bragged about his skill so often. He was good, of course, but not nearly that good. Not as good as Sadeus had himself seen when the boy had been on the battlefield fighting the... He was faking. Sadeus found himself grinning.
"Now that's almost clever," he said softly.
What? Ilay asked.
Adolin is fighting beneath his capacity, Sadius explained, as the youth got a hit, barely, on Iraniv's helm. He's reluctant to display his real skill, as he fears it will scare others away from dueling him. If he looks barely capable enough to win this fight, others might decide to pounce.
Ilay narrowed her eyes, watching the fight.
Are you sure? Couldn't he just be having an off day?
I'm sure, Sadius said. Now that he knew what to watch for, he could easily read it in Adolin's specific moves, the way he teased Iraniv to attack him, then barely fended off the blows. Adolin Kolin was cleverer than Sadius had given him credit for. Better at dueling, as well. It took skill to win a bout, but it took true mastery to win while making it look the whole time that you were behind. As the fight progressed, the crowd got into it, and Adolin made it a close contest. Sadius doubted many others would see what he did. When Adolin, moving lethargically and leaking light from a dozen hits, all carefully allowed on different sections of plate so none shattered and exposed him to real danger, managed to bring down Iraniv with a lucky blow at the end, the crowd roared in appreciation. Even the light eyes seemed drawn in. Iraniv stormed off, shouting about Adolin's luck, but Sadius found himself quite impressed. There might be a future for this boy, he thought. More so than his father, at least.
Another shard won, Ilay said with dissatisfaction as Adolin raised a hand and walked off the field. I'll redouble my efforts to make certain this doesn't happen again.
Sadius tapped his finger against the side of his seat.
What was it you said about duelists? That they're brash, hot-headed?
Yes, and?
Adolin is both of those things and more, Sadius said softly, considering. He can be goaded, pushed around, brought to anger. He has passion like his father, but he controls it less securely.
Can I get him right up to the cliff's edge, Sadius thought, then shove him off?
Stop discouraging people from fighting him, Sadius said. Don't encourage them to fight him, either. Step back. I want to see how this develops.
That sounds dangerous, Ilay said. That boy is a weapon, Toril.
True, Sadius said, standing. But you are rarely cut by a weapon if you are the one holding its hilt. He helped his wife to her feet. I also want you to tell Ruthar's wife that he can ride with me next time I decide to strike out on my own for a gem heart. Ruthar is eager. He can be of use to us. She nodded, walking toward the exit. Sadius followed, but hesitated, casting a glance toward Dalinar. How would this be if the man weren't trapped in the past? If he'd been willing to see the real world, rather than imagining it?
You'd probably have ended up killing him then, too, Sadius admitted to himself. Don't try to pretend otherwise.
Best to be honest, at the very least, with oneself.